I first read Tim, or his educational pieces about environment, in the Orlek magazine. Some of you remember. Nini is here, this one. And Tim was the editor of the in-house magazine. Came out once a month, hopefully. Once a month, I think it came out. And I think for 30 issues, there was something called Environmental Notes. And in each of these articles, Tim would just introduce one particular form of wildlife and tell you much more about it, the wildlife that was in this area. And some years later, he decided to expand it into a book. Again, some of you may have seen it. It's called Footsteps Through the Salad. It was about wildlife in and around Oroville. And now he's gone one step further and expanded it even more into the wildlife of the Coromandel. The Coromandel, for those of you who don't know it, is a strip of coastline of southeast India, which has really unique fauna and flora. I've only seen the book very, very briefly once, at lunch today. I particularly wanted to find out about peacocks. And one of the things that Dietra did was she introduced peacocks to Oroville. Now, peacocks are a beautiful, beautiful bird, but they have an unnerving habit of screeching in the middle of the night, and it's really a heart-stopping sound. So, since she introduced them, they've got all over Oroville, and there's a particular concentration around our house at present. It seems most of the population are there at night. So I was very interested to know from Tim's book, A, how long do they live? And secondly, do they have any natural predators? Because of course they are a protected bird in India, so I can't do anything about them. And it was bad news on both counts. apparently they can live up to 15 years. And they really don't have natural predators, except for the big cats like leopards and tigers. And we don't have a lot of those at present in Oroville. So somehow or other we're going to have to put up with the peacocks a bit longer. So I'm going to hand over to Tim now, who's going to introduce his new book, and thank him on behalf of Oroville. I think it's the fruit of 5 years of really painstaking work. I'd love to call it a labor of love, but I know at times he's really regretted what he took on, I think, at certain points. Anyway, I'll leave it to Tim.
I'm going to have to use these prompt cards from time to time, I'm afraid, so bear with me. So, big question, why a book on wildlife? The immediate answer is because wildlife is essential to our own existence. All life on Earth is interconnected like a giant web. You take any part out of that, then the rest is affected. And a very good example of that is in food chains. And I'm going to just quickly read three food chains to you. So lions kill and eat hyenas, which kill and eat jackals, which kill and eat rodents. Eagles kill and eat snakes, which kill and eat frogs, which kill and eat insects. Killer whales kill and eat seals, which kill and eat fish, which kill and eat shrimp and krill. So you take any part of that chain out, and the rest is affected. Okay, they don't all collapse overnight, but it's a very, very crucial thing to understand. Wildlife, unfortunately, is now under serious threat all around the planet. It's losing habitats, which are essential to its survival. Examples being habitats like loss for ports, for factories, for mining, coastal resorts, town expansion, deforestation, and wetland draining for agriculture. It's being taken from the wild for sale to the global pet industry. The global industry for pets is absolutely massive, and things like parrots, for example, are constantly being taken from the wild. But every creature has its fans, its admirers, and all around the world there are collectors, and of course there are zoos who want to acquire these creatures for making money or just to pay them kind of thing. So that is a second point. They are being unnecessarily killed
through fear, ignorance, and pollution. So, to give example of fear and ignorance, snakes, sharks, scorpions, and rock bees locally are all affected by this. People are afraid of them, so they kill them. It's almost an immediate reaction, particularly in the local people. They see a snake, kill it. See a scorpion, kill it. And they don't know really what that creature does for them. And being killed for body parts. There is actually a huge, huge market. Elephant tusks, rhinoceros horns, pangolin scales, monitor lizards and crocodile skins, tiger bones, turtle eggs. You can go on and on and on. And this is a massive market. Actually, the international wildlife trade, creatures being taken from the wild for exotic pets, are being killed for traditional medicine, for food, for jewelry, for animal tusk carvings, for fins like the shark fin soup, shells, skins, horns, etc. The estimated world market is $8 billion. In Indian money, that is more than 50,000 crores of rupees. So it's such a massive market, of course it attracts all sorts of dubious people who are trading in it. And it is very, very serious. The result is that we are losing species after species being driven to extinction. The latest estimate is there are 8.7 million species in worldwide, give or take 1.3 million. Let's call it 9 million. If that is the case, we are today losing between 900 and 4,500 species annually. That's an incredible, incredible number, even the lowest level. Approaching 1,000 species annually being taken and disappeared, becoming extinct on the planet. So scientists, as watching this as happening, are now saying that the sixth mass extinction has already started. The fifth mass extinction saw us losing the dinosaurs, which we all are aware of. Now, we are already considered to be in the sixth mass extinction. It's actually happening, it started. I think there's a good chance we'll be one of the first species to go. On this subject, the present estimate is the latest extinction is happening 1,000 times faster than any previous extinction, which is an incredible, incredible thought. Almost every life form is dropping in numbers dramatically. Birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, butterflies, fish, etc. And it's a chain reaction. As I was saying at the beginning, the food chains. Anything which is decimated or lost in a chain affects the rest of the chain and actually ultimately affects all life on Earth, including ourselves. If you just take elephants, for example, in the 1950s, there was approximately 6 million elephants roaming Africa. Today, that number has dropped to between 400 and 500,000. That still may sound like a lot of elephants, but it is a 90% drop in elephants. 90%. Elephants are being killed on average at the rate of 55 a day. That's an incredible, incredible figure to me. 55 elephants are being killed every day. So, what is the solution? Which is really what we're here for. Can you change the next slide? The answer, as I see it, has to be through education. You have to awaken the public to what I call the wonders of the wild world around them. For most people, nature is just something out there. It's out there. It's not in the house. It's out there. And that's about as far as they can consider what it is and what its value is. Sometimes you kill it, and sometimes you can eat it, or something like that. So, to me, the key thing is to make the natural world interesting and enjoyable. And to do that, I think one of the prime approaches we can take is to make people aware that the animals, the most of the natural world, all the creatures around them, actually are like us. They have very similar emotions, similar behavior patterns. Some of them cohabit, for example, for communal living. They have individual attractions and dislikes. They form couples and partnerships. They have courtship rituals. They love or have tender feelings for each other. They make homes together. They rear their children together. They can be loyal to each other. They play with each other. They're capable of grief and sadness and mutual support in structured societies. They even have individual personalities. Recent research in Belgium found that even cockroaches have individual personalities. There are bold cockroaches and there are timid cockroaches. So if that applies to cockroaches, it probably applies to everything else, including earthworms, etc. So the other thing would be to try to make people aware of what I call the value and the importance. So snakes, bees, bats, scorpions, etc. Try to help them to understand that snakes kill the rodents, the bees do the pollination, the bats take away the mosquitoes, even the scorpions play a role in nature. They actually take away for us some of the creatures we don't want. And rather importantly, scorpions are prey creatures, or part of the diet, of 124 vertebrates and 26 invertebrates. So 150 creatures in nature actually eat scorpions. They're really a part of their diet. So remove scorpions, and again, the food chain is affected. Regarding the importance, I mean, I can highlight this, if you like, by taking the example of rats. There are an estimated 5 billion rats in India. That's 500 crores of rats. They eat or damage some 4 to 5% of crops, and that works out to something like 10 million tons of food annually. Without snakes, owls, jackals, foxes, shrews, monitor lizards, and so on, how would we control those rats? It's a horrifying thought that even now, with all those creatures still functioning, there are 5 billion rats in our country. What the aim would be to, by making people aware of all this, to increase environmental awareness, increase the enthusiasm for protection, and also better conservation will result. The next question is who to educate. As I see it, the key people are the younger generation, schools, colleges, and their teachers, but also top executives in companies, state and government of India officials, but particularly the general public. We're very lucky in UK, where I come from, because we have people like David Attenborough, who is always producing documentaries, and there's so much on television, it's almost unavoidable, but it's not so in other countries. I think India falls short of this ideal of communicating to the public the value and importance of the wild world around them. So, how to educate? So obviously films, documentary films, TV is a wonderful medium, but for me, all I could do was work on a book. So that is really what we're here for today. Right, Jim. The background and rationale to this book is there are plenty of specialist books in India on tigers, birds, snakes, insects, etc. But there aren't any books with profiles covering a wide cross-section of life forms, particularly in an area like the Coromandel. So, as I saw it, there's a need for a book for laymen, not for scientists, attractive, easy to read, interesting, informative, and hopefully enjoyable. And as Alan said, this started with 30 articles which I'd written for Oralik. But as I went through them, I found there were gaps. There was nothing on butterflies and moths, nothing on slugs and snails, nothing on centipedes and millipedes, etc., etc., etc. So I started adding, and as fast as I produced a new article or a new profile, I thought of another one, another one, another one. Finally, I added 33 more. The result, 2012, was the Footsteps Through the Salad book, which Alan has just shown you. The problem with the Footsteps Through the Salad, it sold very well in Oralik and locally, but it had limitations. Because if you look at Oralik on the map of India, it's just a one dot in the map. So people come from the Punjab, come from Bengal, come from Delhi. It's quite easy, and I think it was often they felt, well, this doesn't apply to me. I live in another part of India. This is only Oralik. It's not strictly true, but I have a feeling that was the reaction. So, talking about this with Joss, Pritchandiklam Bio Resource Center, he said, why don't you expand it? Why don't you do a book on the Coromandel? So I thought this is an interesting idea. It was a challenge. So for another 4.5 years, I worked away at increasing the coverage from the original Footsteps Through the Salad book. The result? So this is why you're here today, and hopefully will be, you know, what you consider to purchase for yourselves. Wildlife Great and Small of India's Coromandel. I won't read through all the details, but it's on the back of the book. I'm a little bit embarrassed to see my picture down there. It wasn't my choice. It was the publishers in Kolkata who said the picture of the author should be there. So that's my apology for that. Right, let's go on. So just to compare the two books, Wildlife Profiles. The first, amphibians, exactly the same. Mammals, 4 more mammals. Birds, 8 more birds. Reptiles, another reptile, which happens to be the Mugger crocodile living down the road near Cuddalore. Flying insects, gone up by 4. And other creatures, has gone up by 8. So from 63 profiles with 3 appendices, we've gone up to 88 with 7 appendices. What we have lost is the 7 articles on natural phenomena and on bacteria and viruses, which I don't think anybody would miss. So. Right, in terms of details between the two books, the original Footsteps book was actually 315 pages, but 34 of those pages were to do with natural phenomena, bacteria and viruses. Actually, when it came to wildlife profiles, there was only 281 pages. Now we've gone up to 402. 4 color photographs. The original book was only 27 color photographs. 158 photographs now. Drawings gone up by 28. Full page art studies is the same. Cartoons, thanks to Charu, doubled, more than doubled from 5 to 11, and the life cycle charts have gone up from, the same before, 3. So the overall picture is, whereas the Footsteps book had 193 illustrations, now we've gone up to 358, an 85% increase. It's a much, much richer, much more colourful book, and therefore I hope much more enjoyable for people to go through. Right. New profiles, just very quickly to read them alphabetically. Antlions, aphids, bagworms, bedbugs, bugs generally, cicadas, crabs, crow pheasants, airwigs, egrets, fish, flamingos, hedgehogs, kites, leeches, leopards, mugger crocodile, owls, parakeets, honey badger, red velvet mites, and robber flies, slender loris, tailed bird, and woodpeckers. 25 more life profiles. Okay. The key points I would make about this book are as follows. I like the original book. Again, this is very much a book for laymen. It's not a scientist book. It's easy to read. It has humorous touches. So it should be a book that anybody from any background in India at any age could get something out of. It's substantially improved the text in terms of content and style and so on. Has an enlarged 7-page glossary. The previous glossary was just 5 pages, so 2 more pages of glossary. The cover design, compared to the original Footsteps, I think is much more impactful, much more immediately noticeable as to what it applies to. I'm ashamed when I think back that it was my decision to go for that picture of the Machamandia through the forest. But anyway, too late for that. And much more richly illustrated, as I was just explaining, with the enormous increase in illustrations. And at this point, I would say it's presently unique in India. As I say, there are books on tigers, there are books on all sorts of wildlife, but nowhere, to my knowledge, is there a comparable book covering 88 life forms in profile form. So at this point, I would say it's the first time in India that there is such a book. Right, so these are all the key points I wanted to share with you. Now comes the big crunch. Price. Okay, Footsteps started off at 720 rupees, but later we reduced it to 550, and it still sells at 550. The Coromandel book, the full market price, is going to be 950 rupees. Actually, at that price, we're not making any money, we're losing money, but I didn't want to go over 1,000 rupees, particularly because I want young people, students and people, to be able to afford it. Today, discount price for Aurevilians, probably up to the end of the month, 20% discount, 750 rupees. So that's where we stand. Okay, so I think these are all the main points. Just before I wind up, two things. One is, in the introduction for today's PowerPoint presentation, book launch, etc., one or two questions I posed, and one of the questions was, do we have vampire bats locally? Vampire bats. Blood-sucking vampire bats. So, this was a question I simply put for people to think about. The answer is, we don't have the classic vampire bats, but we do have a false vampire. It's a carnivore. It actually eats other bats, small birds, reptiles, surface fish, and insects. But it will not take your blood, so you can relax on that. So, that was, I think, the last point just to share with you. Except one last detail, I would like to take this opportunity to express my thanks to various people here who thanked me, who have helped me in getting the book out, and particularly to Janatanan over there, our DTP man. Without Jana's help, this book would never have appeared. He has been absolutely fantastic. His skills, his suggestions, he's just been wonderful for me. And I'm so, so grateful. Thank you, Jana. Okay, all that's left for you is to have a look at the book and take a cup of tea. Okay? Thank you.